Hello, friends, and welcome to another edition of Crossroads, where faith and culture meet. I'm here in the studio with my co-host, Dean Welty, and Dean is just back from a weekend that he and his wife, Janet, spent at an event called the Values Voters Summit. For today's program, we'll be talking about their experience at this event. You know, on Election Day every November, every polling precinct in America is a very tangible crossroads where faith and culture meet. So if you think about it, every voter in the country is actually a values voter. We all vote for the candidates that best represent our particular values. So the real questions are, first, what are our values when it comes to the role of government and what determines the soundness of public policy? And second, have we really taken the time to investigate and understand where candidates are on those values? So I imagine that events like this one that Dean and Janet attended could be incredibly helpful as citizens try to sort through those issues. But that is just my speculation. Dean, I want to know, first of all, what is it that compels you and Janet to spend the time, energy, and I know money to attend events like this Values Voters Summit?
Rita, I didn't think about it until you just put the question that way. Half of it is I just like to spend weekends away with Janet.
That's our second great honeymoon. Answer.
I hope she's listening.
Yes.
Rita, you really set this up because I often am asked, who shall I vote for? And it is so critical. We come there with our values, but we haven't done the research on the candidates.
Yeah.
And I think we're going to do a program just before Election
Yes.
Day on where some of these candidates stand, what the issues are. But let me answer your question. Why do we spend the time, the energy, and the money to go to Washington, D.C. for a couple of days? And it doesn't happen in a vacuum. So I'd like to give our listeners just a little background
for
how
do.
We got into this and why it's so important to us. So for the benefit of any of our listeners who may not know that history, Janet and I started on this path almost 20 years ago. We just returned to the United States after 26 years of service with the U.S. Department of State, and half of those years were overseas. So when we came back, it was a rude awakening, a little bit like Rip Van Winkle had when he came back after a drunken spree up in the mountains. Took him 20 years to sober up. When he came back, he had this rude awakening just like we did. We came back to the United States in the middle of the Clinton-Lewinsky affair. Janet and I looked at each other and wondered what had happened to our country and to our culture. And the more we saw, the more concerned we became. Several years later, something else happened. We had our first grandson. I held him in my hands, and that's when it really hit me. The coarsening of the culture. Yeah. Again, we knew we had to do something. So together with some like-minded friends, we created at that time, this was back in 2002, the Valley Family Forum, and we began working with other groups who shared our concerns and who also want to do something. So that's how it all got started. But now to answer your question more directly, we now attend events like this out of our love for God and for our country. But it's also then for action. It's in obedience to God's call on us to be salt and light to the world, not to the world at large, but to the arenas of our immediate influence. So it's that simple: God, country, and obedience to be salt and light. Now, in addition, though, we get a self-benefit out of this. We go because it is so easy to get discouraged, frustrated, to get mired down in the slough of despond and despair. So we go to this for inspiration and encouragement that we receive at the annual Values Voter Summit. And it comes to us both by the great speakers, but also by the presence of some 2,000 other values voters from all across America who share our concerns and who, like us, know that we need to do something. It is a great experience.
That is really encouraging. And, you know, as I think about it, it can be really depressing and discouraging to look around, not just at what's going on or not going on in our government, but just the culture in general can be really discouraging. And it can be tempting at times to want to just hunker down with your own family, friends, and loved ones and just try to sort of shut the world outside. But as you share, Dean, Christians have always done something. And so in order to keep going, we need to come together and encourage one another and build each other up sometimes.
Well, and it also reflects the two prongs of the Valley Family Forum, inform and mobilize. And so we go there to get information, but then get pumped up to go out and share that with others.
Yeah, because we are not a chit-chat society. Right?
That goes back to the beginning days of the Valley Family
Forum.
Dean, I'm glad to be with you, but if this is just a chit-chat society, I'm out of here.
Yeah, I can get frustrated by groups that just want to wring their hands, complain, talk about what's happening, but not do anything to influence it. So let's get back to this event. I know it was hosted by the Family Research Council. Tell us a little bit about that organization.
Well, it's interesting, Rita. The Family Research Council, it's headquartered in Washington, D.C., and it got its start very much like we did, except it was 20 years earlier. It was in the early 80s when a group of men led by Dr. James Dobson from Focus on the Family got together in Washington, D.C. to share their concerns about what was happening in America and who knew that they had to do something about it. And their vision, just like ours, was for a culture in which all of human life is valued, where marriages and families flourish, and where religious liberty thrives. Three great pillars
of
concern. And then their mission was naturally to advance the sanctity of life, to advance faith, family, and freedom, all of them from a Christian perspective. And they would do that in the public policy arena as well as in the culture at large. So to that end, here's how they did it. They pulled together a team of experts to counter the growing army of forces that was working to undermine these core Judeo-Christian values. And then, back 30 years ago, then as now, they helped arrange congressional testimony, provided reports to elected officials, they prepared legal briefs on family issues, they secured appointments on government panels and positions, and they offered media commentary, the whole gamut of activity. Now, more recently, and led by its fourth and current president, Tony Perkins, they recognized that they also needed help from pastors. And therefore, they established a new department called Church Ministries to equip and to embolden pastors to engage in what Dr. Dobson has referred to as this great civil war of values. And you know, Rita, it's interesting because at the summit last weekend, Michelle Bachmann was one of the speakers. She's a former member of Congress and a presidential candidate. She made this same observation when she said that America is based on a biblical foundation and unchanging truth advanced by faithful pastors and churches throughout the years. We need our pastors. Just one more thing, Rita. People often ask this about the Family Research Council. They ask if it's nonpartisan.
Mm-hmm.
And the answer is categorically, yes, it is nonpartisan. It is based on values.
Yeah.
If a Republican wants to embrace those values, we'll embrace them back. If a Democrat wants to embrace those values, we embrace them back. Yeah. So it is a 501c3 nonpartisan, nonprofit educational organization that does not support, endorse, or oppose candidates, but it is able to spend a small part of its budget on direct and grassroots lobbying. Mm-hmm. It also has a political action arm called FRC Action. That is a 501c4 mm-hmm. nonprofit organization with broader freedoms under IRS regulations for lobbying, grassroots activism, issues advertising, and political engagement. And for listeners who want to know more, just go to FRC.org or FRCAction.org.
Now, I want to ask you about one more thing. And I know, and maybe some of our listeners have heard, that Family Research Council, that's FRC, has been labeled by this group called Southern Poverty Law Center as a designated hate group. and its president, Tony Perkins, has been named an extremist. Their website, Dean, I just checked it out yesterday, it lists the ideology of FRC as, quote, anti-LGBT. Can you comment on that?
It is being called a hater by those who hate most. The SPLC is a hating organization. It is one of a group of organizations, including the ACLU, Planned Parenthood, the Human Rights Campaign, Freedom From Religious Foundation, and others that are themselves extremely hateful, hostile to the core values and principles that we hold dear. And therefore, they attack us and the FRC as haters. So, just one more thing on that. This charge that the FRC is anti-LGBT is another misguided charge and is based solely on their belief that God's design for marriage is between only one man and one woman. Therefore, we believe that any sexual relationship outside of that, whether homosexual or heterosexual, is a violation of God's moral laws. And the SPLC calls that hateful. But just to be clear, the FRC, like the rest of us, state that our opposition is not against an individual or a group of individuals who identify as LGBT, but rather it's against any behavior or action that violates God's moral law. It's a simple distinction between hating the sin and loving the sinner. I could also add one more thing about SPLC.
Go ahead, Dean.
As I alluded to before, it is engaging itself in hate speech by referring to the FRC as a hate group. By doing that, it makes it a target of haters. Very specifically, what happened? The FRC was violently attacked several years ago by a hater who entered the building for the sole purpose of shooting and killing FRC personnel. That man cited the SPLC's website that you checked for motivating him to take this violent action. Fortunately, thankfully, he was forcibly intercepted before anybody was killed.
And you know, Dean, I can't let this go by without commenting myself on it. This whole labeling, particularly Christian groups and organizations, as hate groups because they believe what the church has always believed, what the Bible has always taught, it's an intimidation tactic to silence Christians and make them fearful to speak the truth because they don't want to be labeled and misunderstood as haters. It's exactly the thing, I believe, that makes our society so polarized today. And also, I have to add, it's irrational. Of course, it's possible to believe that a behavior is wrong without hating the person who engages in that behavior. You know, just for one example, I believe that prostitution is wrong, that it is harmful, that it's not good for society. Do I hate people who are prostitutes? Of course not. So it's just an irrational thing, and it just is astounding to me that people can be so moved by this ridiculous type of false labeling.
Rita, the thought just came to me. Jesus warned his disciples that they were going to be persecuted. Yeah. And here's how he described it. You will be persecuted by people because they do not know me or my Father. Mm. And I think that's what happens here. They attack us because they don't know us, our motives, and they aren't interested in finding
out. Yeah, that's right. Okay, well, back to the summit. Tell us some of the highlights for you. Who were your favorite speakers and why?
Well, that's a big order because there were about 25 of them. But a couple of them really stand out. They were all great because they all addressed this whole range of values and principles that we've already talked about, in addition to more general topics such as national security and education. For example, on the issue of life, Daniel Daleiden spoke about the continued discoveries that the Center for Medical Progress has been making regarding Planned Parenthood's sale of fetal body parts. In addition, we saw a movie screening of Gosnell, the trial of America's biggest serial killer, which will air, by the way, in public theaters on October 12, and which I highly recommend. On the issue of religious freedom, Secretary of State Mike Pompeo described steps he has taken to host the first ever ministerial to advance international religious freedom at the State Department. It drew representatives from over 80 countries for the purpose of discussing ways to protect Christians and other minorities overseas. He and other speakers also noted the progress the U.S. is making to degrade the ISIS threat in the Middle East, and they also are very effective in creating a more favorable mood among Arab nations toward the U.S. as their protection against threats from Iran. Now, there was a surprise speaker for religious freedom, Jack Phillips. Our listeners may remember him from our program several weeks ago, because he talked about his legal battles in Colorado as the owner of Masterpiece Cake Shop, and then how we celebrated together the Supreme Court decision in his favor.
I wish I could have shaken his hand.
It was great. I did. I had a chance to tell him that we had the program about his work. And then in the court system, and this was a big one, Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell was there, and he compared being on the constant defense during the 8 years of Obama-era policies compared with the recent achievements under Trump. It is a difference between night and day. And those included particularly the confirmation of Supreme Court Justice Neil Gorsuch and also dozens of other circuit and district court judges, which he described as the most successful 18 months he has seen in his 34 years. And of course, to a standing and extended ovation, he concluded by saying, and this just reverberated throughout the ballroom. He concluded by stating categorically that Judge Kavanaugh will be on the U.S. Supreme Court in the very near future.
Wow. Well, Dean, I'm curious to know what the overall attitude was of both speakers and the attendees toward President Trump. As you know, I'm not a big fan of the president's personality or the way he expresses himself. I do not consider him a good role model, but on the other hand, I do think he has done some really good things for the country as far as public policy and, as you mentioned, judicial appointments. And I know there are others who share that really uneasy sense about him, but it does seem that there are some conservatives who genuinely like him. So was he a focus of much attention, and what was the prevailing attitude?
Well, another good question, Rita. President Trump did speak at this Values Voters Summit 2 years ago, just before the 2016 elections, and again last year, but not this year. But President Trump, as you can imagine, he always looms large in the background. And in any event, you are not alone in your mixed feelings about him and his presidency. But it reminds me of what Tom Minnery said in his book entitled Why You Can't Stay Silent, which we discussed several weeks ago. Minnery warned us that when we take a stand for our beliefs, we will be criticized, persecuted, and even prosecuted. But there's always the question whether that comes about because of our flawed style of presentation, or is it because of the substance of the positions that we are taking. In Trump's case, as you suggested, I think we all have reservations about his style, but we are deeply grateful for his substance. I'll just run through a few things that he has achieved that really resonates with Values Voters.
Now, just to clarify, when you say his substance, you mean the substance of his policy and
That's
his
correct.
Administration,
that is
not
correct.
Necessarily his character.
That is correct.
Okay.
That goes in another direction.
Okay.
But for example, and I talked about some of these things on the issue of life. Immediately upon his inauguration, he reinstated the Mexico City policy, which defunds abortion providers overseas. He ended federal funding for the United Nations Population Fund, which also provides funding for overseas abortion providers. And he continues to push Congress to defund Planned Parenthood. He has stood strongly for life in every possible way, including leaping to the defense of the Little Sisters of the Poor.
Yes.
And that goes to religious freedom. Again, he has signed an executive order promoting free speech and religious liberty, in which every executive department and agency shall respect and protect the freedom of persons and organizations to engage in religious and political speech. He appointed and the Senate confirmed former pro-life governor of Kansas, Sam Brownback, as the ambassador of international religious freedom to promote religious freedom as a core objective to U.S. foreign policy. Trump also created a conscience and religious freedom division in the Department of HHS to prioritize the protection of religious rights of all Americans. He issued an executive order to provide greater opportunity for faith-based organizations to compete for federal grants, contracts, and programs. And he has moved to end enforcement of the Johnson Amendment, which prohibited pastors and churches from engaging in political activity. There's a whole list, but I'll just mention two more. He recognized Jerusalem as the undivided capital of the nation of Israel, and he relocated the American embassy from Tel Aviv to Jerusalem. This is in fulfillment of his promise to stand alongside Israel in the face of anti-Semitism across the globe. Also, the second one, he has pulled out of the UN Human Rights Council because of its poor record as a defender of human rights and also because of its strong bias against Israel. When he sees a problem, he goes to fix it, come what may.
Yeah.
And these are issues that resonated throughout the packed ballroom of values voters. We might also mention the conservative judges that he has appointed.
Yes.
And I've already alluded to that, but particularly the appointment of Judges Neil Gorsuch and now Brett Kavanaugh pending his confirmation to the Supreme Court.
Well, Dean, I understand that Vice President Pence was actually there at the summit. So tell us what he had to say.
Well, he really knows how to introduce himself to a crowd. He introduced himself first as a Christian, then as a conservative, and then as a Republican in that order.
Good
you
for
can
him.
Imagine the response he
yeah.
got from this packed ballroom of values voters. And then he listed some of President Trump's achievements from the first 18 months of his presidency. He also went through the various steps that have been taken to grow the economy, cut taxes, improve border security and law enforcement, and to strengthen our national security posture. Then, drawing on the theme of the summit, again, he knows how to connect with the crowd, he ended his remarks to a standing ovation with these words, "Let this be the day that we decided to vote, to stand, and to pray in order to protect our values, preserve our nation, and uphold our freedom. And let this be the day that we pledge to one another to keep taking America to new heights for our sake and for the sake of future generations." You can imagine he is well loved
yes.
and well appreciated
yes.
by values voters.
Well, Dean, was there anything surprising to you about what happened at the summit?
You're talking about the general mood of the summit itself?
I was actually skipping ahead a question because I think we're getting
okay.
tight on time.
Well, I'll just talk a little bit about the mood. There was not a lot of anger and frustration, certainly not at Trump. But it's not surprising there was a lot of anger and frustration directed at the Democrats, particularly for the way that they have treated Judge Kavanaugh at the hearings. Now, there was a surprise in terms of the speakers. I think you'll like this because of your concern about what's happening to freedom on college campuses.
Yeah.
There was a president of Oklahoma Wesleyan University named Dr. Everett Piper. Mm-hmm. He heard about a student who complained that he was offended by a chapel address on 1
oh,
Corinthians
dear.
13, no less.
Oh, dear.
Because it made him feel guilty that he wasn't loving enough.
Oh, dear.
Well, President Piper didn't coddle to this snowflake.
Good for him.
What he did, he wrote something that appeared on the university website, and here is what it said. "This university is here to teach you about truth, not to protect you from your feelings of guilt or to make you feel good about yourself. Grow up. We are a university, not a daycare. If you can't deal with it, perhaps you belong in another school."
Wow. I'm going to have to get a copy of that open letter.
Oh, good. Not a daycare.
Good.
But beyond that, I don't know I was particularly surprised by anything. I was just impressed and encouraged by the passion of each of the speakers and by the unity of the 2,000 participants at the summit. Unity. It was a great feeling, Rita. Our first motto was E Pluribus Unum. Out of many, one. In 1954, we added the words "one nation under God." It's all about unity, and that's what this summit was all about. being unified behind the Judeo-Christian values and constitutional principles on which America was founded and has prospered. Now, these values are not political. They are for everyone, for Republicans and Democrats alike. They are university values, and they should be embraced by all of us.
Yeah.
Unity.
Agree. Well, Dean, what are some take-home lessons for our listeners? We're getting close to the end of our program here, but what do you want our listeners to know?
Well, it really flows from that unity message that we really need to be unified behind these values. We can get so distracted in the quest for political power. So it's really all about unity. But the second take-home that we were given, the speakers reminded us repeatedly about the midterm elections just a few weeks away on Tuesday, November 6th, and that the values voters need to turn out in order to keep control of both the Senate and the House and to protect and build on the achievements of the past 18 months. Well, Rita, let me turn this back to you. You just wrote a column on the need for unity. I wonder how you see this now as all tying together, whether it's behind the Declaration of Independence, behind the Constitution, behind these core values.
Mm-hmm. Well, the way I see it, Dean, unity is possible in America today. Not easy, but possible. We are an incredibly diverse nation, and America was clearly founded on Judeo-Christian principles, and the submission to our Creator and His laws are enshrined in our founding documents. But we know that so much of our population today is non-Christian, and we are not a theocracy. Our Constitution recognizes freedom of religion as a natural, fundamental right, while outlining a system of civil government that is premised upon those good, solid Judeo-Christian principles. So the beauty of that, Dean, is that the Constitution and the Declaration of Independence before it really form and outline a civic creed that is in no way a replacement for Christian faith, don't get me wrong, but it contains a set of principles that Americans from all backgrounds, all religions, all ethnicities can unite behind. The belief in natural rights, equality under the law, the commitment to self-governance, government that is limited in order to protect individual liberty, and finally, and this is a big one, the acknowledgement that the purpose of liberty is to enable people to pursue truth and virtue.
Amen, Rita. And I think all of us can just pray, because this is a spiritual battle.
Yeah.
More than it is a political
yes.
battle. And just pray for another great awakening in America, and may it begin with you.
Well, our time is up, so thank you so much for joining us. And Dean, thank you for sharing about your experience at this event. If you'd like to listen to this program again or share it with your friends, go to our website at valleyfamilyforum.org and click on the link to Crossroads on the homepage. We want to thank our generous sponsors at Blue Ridge Chimney Services and the dental practice of Scott Dunaway, and also to so many of you for your prayers, your encouragement, and your financial support. If you'd like to make a tax-deductible donation to help keep Crossroads on the air, you can do so by check to Crossroads at P.O. Box 881, Harrisonburg, 22803. I'm Rita Dunaway with Dean Welty and engineer Robbie Meadows, inviting you to join us again next week at the Crossroads, where faith and culture meet. Until then, have a great week putting your faith into action.
Rejoice, 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 rej